Hey everybody, it's Paul Yeager. This is the MTOM Show podcast, a production of Iowa PBS and the Market to Market TV show. Right before Christmas in Iowa comes a survey from Iowa State University and the Center for Ag Research and Development, or CARD. Dr. Wendong Zhang is a past guest on this podcast. He's also the one who conducts the survey. But a tiny little change for him, he has now moved on to Cornell University in New York, but he did come back to do the survey this year, and he has one more survey that he's going to keep a part of. We're going to talk about the importance of why he wanted to come back and do that survey and what the reasoning was for that. We'll get into that. We'll also have a quick little discussion about China and their impact today's discussion. This is the MTOM Show podcast. Let's get to it. Doctor, I know Camp Anil's look the same, but that doesn't look like Ames. Where are you sitting right now?
I just moved to Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, so upstate New York. But it's, as I can assure you, that both campuses are beautiful. We just have a little more waterfall and gorges here.
And you're not getting ready for a snowstorm like we are right here.
Well, it's the same latitude ranges, so we're getting probably a similar amount of snow.
So you made the change to Cornell. What prompted the move?
I think that we have stayed in the Midwest for 13 years, and my wife and I are most intrigued by the proximity to urban centers where we can go to Toronto, for example, for the good Chinese food. We haven't tried that yet, but we have been to Niagara Falls once already.
Well, I'm sure the Ames business owners are going to say, we tried, but we know how that is. How would you say the two campuses are similar?
I think that the Cornell is actually not only a private university, but also a public land grant university like Iowa State as well. That there's both university have a connection where we want to do work not only for research and for students, but also do work that is that benefits the general public. And so today, you know, we're going to talk about the land value survey that is started in the 1940s at Iowa State. That's the first of its kind in the nation. And Cornell also want to do things along those lines that benefits agriculture and agribusiness farmers in the New York State and Northeast region as well. So I think the sort of has similar land grant ideals.
Will you start a new survey for New York then?
I probably will, but the value of the survey in part has a lot to do with its longevity and history. So I think that it's really hard to catch up to the rigor and the prominence of the Iowa State University survey. So that in that sense that I was sort of lucky to have this well-established survey records that the if you look at across the researchers across the country, that they often use the ISU survey for research and for analysis because we provide the longest and most comprehensive data for farmland market in the U.S.
Well, and you mentioned already the history of this survey, and I think the last time you and I chatted, we talked about that history. So much so, you came back to do the survey here in 2022. What did you, what prompted you, I mean, other than the importance of history, but as a researcher, you're driven there. What prompted you to return this year to do this survey?
I think this year is particularly interesting because that a year ago that the Iowa land values have rose 29%, that the nominal land value have surpassed its prior record. And so we all are anxious to see what the land market will do this year. And the 2022 Iowa State land value survey essentially shows that the average land values in Iowa have risen another 17%. Even if you take the inflation out, that the inflation adjusted value rose about 8 to 9%, which means that in both nominal and inflation adjusted terms that Iowa land values have hit an all-time high. And even if you look at all the 99 counties, close to 60 counties posted historical highs as well, especially we see really strong strengths in Northwest Iowa. If you follow the news and the auction market, you see some of the really crazy high sales of $30,000 per acre land auction sales. So those are some of the pertinent factors that the new things and the momentum in the land market that drove me. I don't want to leave a gap in such important year in the, and also I think the long history since the 1940s, it's also a major thing that we want to make sure that we provide consistent data for all 99 counties in Iowa using this important survey.
I've mentioned the $30,000 an acre sale a couple of times on the show, and what we're hearing, and I know this isn't necessarily part of your survey, but it was someone that paid in cash. They weren't tied to a loan on that. Is that anything you look at?
Yes. So I think that I do another survey, and you should stay tuned for next June's 2022 Farmland Ownership and Tenure Survey, where in the 2017 version shows 81% of the land in Iowa are owned free of debt. So over 80% of the land are owned free of debt. So even though we're seeing more downward pressure from higher interest rate, that the land market didn't respond as much, in part is because that not a whole lot of land are actually under debt and not a whole lot of land are bought using the mortgages, as you mentioned, right? So if you think about the factors driving these changes over the past 2-3 years, the significantly higher commodity prices, especially for corn, soybean, especially cattle as well, that those resulted a significant increase in farm income and in the cash on hand. And you see phenomena like this, that you have cash purchases for these really significant purchases. If you think from a farmer's perspective, this is the single largest investment item they often buy in their lifetime. And across the sector, this also accounts for over 80% of the U.S. farm assets as well. So you're absolutely right that, you know, the cash on hand is a significant part of the factor that drives the rise. And another interesting part is that because of the supply chain, with the added cash, farmers would probably also want to buy a new John Deere tractor and combine, but they can really hard they have a really hard time finding a new one to buy. So they want to park the money somewhere, and land is what they know, right?
So does that bode well for handling any type of ripples in a recession if 81% or 80% of the land is cash owned or owned already? That can buffet rural Iowa against a downturn?
I think that if you're worried about the replay of the 1980 farm crisis, I think that we're better suited, at least this time, that for one, that not a lot of land are under mortgage and doesn't have a whole lot of debt, right? So the leverage is low. And the interest rate has risen, but it's when you are looking at the historical rates, that they are still relatively low, especially compared to the 1980s. And another thing is when you're looking at the lending practices, the lenders are more prudent. And when you are buying land, they ask for a much higher collateral payments, essentially, and also that your loan-to-value ratio are sort of low. That if you imagine that in the 1980s, that some of the lender might be willing to lend you 80% of the market value for a land parcel that you're willing to buy. But now if you're buying a land parcel that is worth maybe $15,000 per acre, maybe you can only get like $6,000 or $7,000 from the lender, if not more, if not less.
And I've heard in the banking industry that there are a few banks that have said, you know what, we're going to be a little more judicious in what we loan out right now until we sort some things out. So to me, that translates, that backs up what you're saying.
Right. I think that when you are thinking about that what some of the factors that really caused problem in the 1980s is that when you buy a grant and you use a lot of debt and you use one of the fully paid for parcel as collateral, and when the newer parcel that you want to buy face insanely high interest rate and not only knock down that parcel that, but also take your fully paid for parcel as collateral down as well. So that's where, you know, that hurt a lot of farmers across Iowa and in the Midwest. I think that those are some provisions that built in to try to prevent that. And I think that another thing is that when you are looking at the income growth between before the 1980 farm crisis, in the 70s, a lot of the growth are actually inflation driven. So we're now facing really high inflation. So I think that's got people worried, right? But also that when you are thinking about what we are seeing over the past 15, 20 years, we have seen substantial income growth from 2003 to 2013. We have seen substantial commodity price rises and real income gains over the past few years as well. So those are more tangible than the income pictured before we headed to the 1980 farm crisis.
So the, I guess you could say the scene is set differently. We'll just see how the play unfolds.
Right. So I think that this is not to say that the high farmland prices benefit everyone, right? So if you are a beginning farmer, you're thinking about entering the market, your cost is astronomically higher. And if you're a producer who primarily or rely a significant amount to the rented ground, then you can expect that the rent will likely rise with land values as they tend to, along with your higher fertilizer prices and other input costs, that you are facing a much more challenging production season than before. I think those are some of the things that you do see. There's a real distribution effects that even when you're looking at the landowners, the senior landowners who are 65 or older, that the percent of the land they fully paid for are probably closer to 95% or higher, right? It's the younger folks that is still often still have the mortgage as well. So we need to pay attention to the group that is more disproportionately impacted through the higher farmland prices.
What could push us higher?
I think that the 2022 survey, we asked people to do a forecast, and the general consensus is still, I think, that they're forecasting a stable market and probably even another 5 to 10% growth next year. I think that the commodity prices are still really high, in part supported and fueled by the Russian-Ukraine conflict. The land supply is still fairly limited, and I think those are some of the key factors that is still supporting the farmland markets. At the same time, we added a new question about asking, what is your perception of the current farmland values? And over 70% of the respondents think the current land values are too high or way too high. So I think that people are a little concerned, because if you think the land market is too high and you think the land market is still going up, that's probably tell you a little worrying sign of a creation of a bubble. I don't necessarily think that's the main story yet, but as I think that we're moving towards that direction to some extent in some areas.
What's the ideal situation? I know the government talks about this soft landing or easing of inflation. Is there such a thing that's possible to happen in land values? Do they ever go down significantly like they do go up?
They do go down. So if you recall that in 2013, when we had the corn price peak, that was about $7 corn. And in 2014, 2015, the corn prices was cut in half to $3, and along with the farm income cut in half. And the conventional wisdom is that the land values will tend to follow probably the same direction, but half the magnitude. So we should expect maybe half of the effect, so it's about 20-25% decline. What we see is from 2013 to 2017 to 2019, there's about 15% decline in land values. I think that the much higher interest rate put downward pressures on the land market. So it's land values roughly equals income divided by interest rate. So the higher interest rate will mean that the cost of financing are higher, but also the bonds are more attractive, so less demand for farmland. And the, you know, $30,000 per acre prices are also scaring some of the investors away. So I think those are some of the factors that is potentially putting more downward pressure, and it takes some time for the downward pressure from the interest rate to be capitalized in the market. It takes about 12 to 18 months lag typically when the Federal Reserve make some policy movements. And in that sense, that we are still likely to see a potential modest decline in a, you know, say 3-year term. But I think that over the next year, a lot of people are still forecasting maybe a stable or modestly increasing land market.
Modest. I mean, 1 to 3%. Is that the modest? Not
more
not
like
digit?
They are thinking probably more around 5.
Okay.
That's 5 to 7, 5 to 10.
And at the rate even we're starting at, that's a heck of a, that's still a lot of money.
I know. So to be frank with you, I think that when I first look at the market, I was thinking the land market probably will rose 10%, but we saw 17%. Granted that maybe half of the growth are inflation driven, but you are absolutely right that those are some of the things that we haven't seen for almost a decade. That and a lot of them are related to the really strong commodity prices. I think a lot of the income growth are coming from the price changes, and this time we not only see crop sector, but also livestock sectors as well. So if that picture changes, I think that probably will could erode some of the profits that the farmer have and change the behavior on the land market as well. But so far, we haven't really seen much of the dent in that regard yet.
Well, I can only imagine at some of these land sales, when you used to have maybe 10 to 20 farmers bidding for a parcel of land, and it gets down to 5 or 2, and one of them's not even in the room or in the state. You teased a little bit about this ownership and tenure survey. What happened? I mean, to me, at an auction, when there's not as many people bidding, we're going to go down. You mentioned that you're going to see less outside money interested in investing in farmland. Did I catch that right? Summarize that right.
So. But I think you're right to some degree, but it's also remember that eventually it only takes two people to really drive up this land prices at a particular auction, right? So I think that across Iowa, that although the investor interest is rising, it's still the local farmer buying a local land story, that the that they 70% of the land in Iowa are bought by local existing farmers as well, that they are often, as you mentioned, that some of them have cash, some of them, especially in Northwest Iowa, which grow most significantly, those many have livestock production. So they, when they see a nearby parcel, they can see economic premium because those are closer and can benefit their expansion or use of the compliance for the manure management plan. So those are some of the reasons that the people are really bidding up. And another element of this is that the the land ownership is sort of a long-term commitment, that the land typically is owned by the same person and the same family over many years, that half the land in Iowa are owned by the same owner for over 20 years. And so they, even though that they are seeing maybe a low return now, but they're thinking maybe 20 years later that I could potentially achieve a decent return down the road, right? So I think that when you're buying $30,000 per acre, it's probably even harder to justify these long-term thinking, but that seems to be some of the calculation that the farmers are making as well.
Give me a quick summary then. Do you see that it was the biggest driver for the increase this year? Commodity prices or interest rate? What do you summarize as the biggest driver for this year?
Right. So there are a couple of drivers. I think the biggest driver is the much higher commodity prices, which translate into much higher income, and you also resulted to the cash purchase farmers that you mentioned earlier, right? And there's that many farmers, agricultural professional who answered the survey also noted the interest rate remained low until summer 2022. And the yields, as was last year, become stronger despite the weather challenges. And many people also noted limited land supply as well. But if we have to point to one factor, it will be the much higher commodity prices that led to a significant increase in farm income that they can use to bid on the land market as well.
Well, I look forward to talking to you in June again about land. We have to do that. I mean, you're one of our more popular guests. But I'd also be, I was looking at my notes before I let you go. I need to ask you about China real quick.
Sure.
What's China's impact on driving, say, higher commodity prices? I mean, we've seen the emergence, whether it was that the country was ready or not from COVID. Right. And we hear about this massive coil that might buy some U.S. commodities. What's China's impact on all of this right now?
I think so. This year, the impacts of the impact of China probably is smaller compared to 2021. 2021, there's a surge in Chinese purchases of U.S. agricultural products because of the Phase One deal, and so those are translated to higher commodity prices and farm income and to some factor contributed to the land values as well. This year, I think, is more of the other trade situation. It's the uncertainty that is caused by the Russian-Ukraine conflict probably pushed the commodity prices higher. That said, China continued to buy a significant amount of agricultural products, which especially is relevant for Iowa, with one in every four rows of soybean goes to China, and China will continue to be a really significant part of U.S. Agricultural exports, and the major movements in China undoubtedly will affect the farm income and also, to a lesser degree, the asset values as well. So I think that as China now potentially is ready to open to the world again, and finally. And so I think that we might expect maybe a bigger row from China next year compared to 2022.
Which would then put pressure to push prices higher. I shouldn't say pressure prices. It might boost them if there's another buyer in the market. Again, back to if there's two buyers.
Right. So I think that's certainly part of the deal. If you talk with my colleague Chad Hart, for example, the international trade picture is actually down for both corn and soybean. I think that has something to do with the COVID lockdown in China. And when you expect China's sort of semi back to business and they want to push for at least 5% growth next year, and that sort of will boost the agricultural exports relative to this year. So that's why I think that when you're looking at the more immediate term, the land market, despite the Federal Reserve will likely continue to raise interest rate, there's still the factor that is still keep pushing the commodity prices higher as well. So I think that's part of the thing that we likely will still see some high auction prices. That if you think back in the day, 5-6 years ago, that It will be rare to see a land parcel sold for more than $15,000. And over the past 2 series, we realized that people only pay attention to those like sold for more than $25,000. I personally think it's a little, sometimes the rate of return may be a little too low to be justified, but it seems that the proximity and the longer term thinking of the farmer purchasers, the buyers are having a slightly different calculus than I do.
That's a great way to put it, because I was going to use the old, nobody has a pencil that sharp to make that figure out. So I like using yours. The calculus doesn't match up.
Yeah. And I read a blog post and someone is wondering what kind of water we feed in Iowa to justify these auction sales as well. I think that, you know, people are paying attention because in part because the significance of Iowa in U.S. agriculture, and also because that we have really good data set, we can actually compare not only across the region, but also compared to, you know, historically, we can say with confidence that this is a real high since the 1940s, and people pay attention when you have such a longevity of the data records to look at. And to compare to, I think those are some of the things that that the people want to pay attention to, and why they care about this survey so much.
Iowa has left a mark on you, Doctor.
Yeah,
you can't escape
it. That, yeah, my older one was born in Ohio, and my younger one was born in Iowa. So those are, you know, our baseline reference point forever.
I love it. I appreciate you fitting us in for this, and always a good chance to talk. And I look forward to visiting with you again in the future. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Happy holidays to all.
My thanks to Dr. Wendong Zhang from now Cornell University, but also Iowa State University, as he talks land values. If you have any feedback for me, send me an email, markettomarket@iowapbs.org. Thank you so very much for watching, listening, or reading. We'll see you next Tuesday with another installment of the MTOM Show podcast.